The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the Kiefer and Curry. If you've been so lucky and fortunate enough to be listening to Tony Curry Radio the last half an hour, 45 minutes, you've been listening to Need to Know, fantastic show that Kip does all by himself. And then he throws me in and we talk a little music, we talk a little sports, we talk about whatever we want to talk about here. But today I want to jump right into
it. It's our show. We can talk about whatever we want to talk about.
Damn straight. And I want to talk a little music and college football. And I want you to start by reciting a line from one of your favorite songs, and that is The Boulevard, and then tell me why.
Yeah, because I'm going to be doing my segment for the starting lineup this Saturday from Las Vegas Boulevard.
Yeah, baby.
I can't wait. Jackson Brown had a song called Boulevard. He was actually talking about L.A., but that's okay. It's still a boulevard. Down on the boulevard, they take it hard. They look at life with such disregard. They say it can't be won the way the game is run. But if you choose to stay, you wind up playing anyway. It's okay. So that's basically how I'm going to open my segment. On the boulevard, maybe in front of the Bellagio dancing fountains, maybe at some optic place in front of Caesar's Palace. I may even climb up to the top of the Eiffel Tower at Paris and do my gig there.
Very nice. And it's perfect. And I, you know, I knew the lyrics, but then when you said the lyrics, I said, how perfect is that for what you wanted to get into briefly here in college football?
Yeah.
Because before the season started, you talked about Texas. You talked about Clemson. Unfortunately, I was on Penn the other State. Side of that. You talked about Penn State. And, you know, what have they done for me lately? Who have they played? Why are they preseason so high? Blah, 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 blah.
Number one, number two, and number four, Tony. And today, as of October 6th, none of them are in the top 25.
That's amazing. I mean, it really is.
Nice job. Yeah. Nice job, rankers.
I mean, voters. It really is. It really is. And then we get into the game of threes. There are three lines this weekend before we talk some rock and roll that all have lines of three and a half. And I want you to tell me why. Georgia minus 3.5 at Auburn. Why?
Auburn's personnel is still getting people's attention. You know, they had a couple of terrible calls go against them in the Oklahoma game. Oklahoma's up to like the fourth team in the country right now.
I know, right?
Tony, Auburn to me looked like a better team on the field than Oklahoma. And they had Mateer for that game, although that's the game he got hurt in. Auburn's personnel, there's nothing wrong with them. They have got a fantastic roster. And this is kind of the same scenario as we saw last week, when I really like Florida to beat Texas in the swamp. I mean, these are teams now that have multiple losses and they just can't afford to lose another game. Florida really was in that position with three losses. Auburn has two. And people have looked at Georgia and saw the Alabama first half where Georgia kind of got owned. They did right the ship and win the second half just 7-0. But even the Kentucky game the other day, they win 35-14. The defense still just doesn't look quite right. So I think this is kind of the Alamo game for Auburn. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of national handicappers think that the Tigers might bring just an all-out effort and maybe, despite the coaching staff, might have the personnel to deal Georgia a defeat. I said before the season, I thought just about everybody in the SEC, because it's so good, there's going to be enough cannibalism there where I thought every team in the SEC would have at least two losses, and I still believe that.
Another three line. And no matter how smart you say you are, no one saw this coming. Texas could be 3-3 after week 7 as the preseason number one team, and obviously the Heisman Trophy, you knew that was blowing out, but who else would you put at number one? It was a good story to put Arch Manning right there, but they're only giving up 3 points to an undefeated Oklahoma squad who last year was like, what? Now all of a sudden they're coming out of their brains.
Yeah, with a backup quarterback too, but Tier's not going to play. They were dreaming that maybe he could somehow miraculously play, but he had thumb surgery 2 weeks ago. He's not going to play. The backup played fine, but Tony, they played Kent State, for God's sake. Kent State is an absolute, just a joke.
Wreck,
they're just there to collect $1.5 million and go back to Ohio. they and Akron are the bottom feeders of the MAC, the Mid-Atlantic Conference, and that's pretty low on the totem pole. So I don't put any stock in the backup running and passing for three touchdowns against Kent State at home. Texas has problems. Their vaunted offensive line got owned by Florida this past week. Arch Manning was running for his life, could never set his feet. Arch Manning still is not a finished product. It was one of the reasons that I really doubted Texas' status and the fact that Arch Manning was the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy going into the season. The last time this guy started at quarterback, it was in a small Catholic school league in New Orleans. If you see footage, they showed footage of one of his games recently. It looked like he was running around. Remember the guy with the Lilliputians, the giant guy and all that? That's what his high school footage was like. He was just batting them off like mosquitoes and running for 80-yard touchdowns. He's holding the ball too long. The offensive line is huge, but they're immobile. Texas has problems, but that line is tight. Because Oklahoma's defense is so formidable. I don't think Oklahoma's going to have much success on offense with a backup quarterback. I don't think their weapons are that scary to begin with, but I think this is going to be a defensive struggle. I really do. I think both teams are going to have a tough time scoring. And so a 3-point line, you know, I probably would have made Texas, you know, more like 4 or 4.5, even though Oklahoma's ranked number 4 in the country and Texas is unranked right now. But Texas has better players. And with Mateer out, I think that's a game changer.
That over under 42.5, by the way. And I think it was 42. Yeah,
under.
Right? Yeah, we're going to take the under.
I think it's going to be 17-16. I think it's going to be a close game.
K4wins.com, K4wins.com, another show that we do. And we're going to be doing that show tomorrow at 10 o'clock Central time right here, and that'll be one of the games we look at. And that sound you hear are Alabama fans emptying all their safety deposit boxes to get Bama minus 2.5 against Missouri. Now that line's about 3, 3.5. You tell me before the season started, if I get Bama minus 3, like some alternative line, like a 6-point tease or something, I'm not kidding you, I probably would have tried to figure out a way to take a loan out so I could actually put a couple of grand on this game, knowing what I thought I knew about Missouri and what I thought I could see about Alabama. And Alabama's looked like the real deal. Now, listen, I know it was a 10.5-point line against Vanderbilt. I know they were at home. I know they got the late scratch touchdown at the end to get the cover, but they did. And now they're going on the road and only getting 3 points or giving up 3 points to Mizzou. What's going on here?
Well, Missouri's played 5 straight home games. They're 5-0. They're ranked like number 14. Their best win of those 5, Tony, was against the Kansas Jayhawks. Mm-hmm. And Kansas is an okay team. That was a legitimate win. The other 4, not legit. Mm-hmm. Last week they beat Massachusetts. I mean, come on, man. You know, I know you guys get tired of me harping on who you played, but it's still who you played. I don't give much stock to a homestanding team that doesn't leave godforsaken Columbia, Missouri until October 18th, when the season's more than half over. The schedule should never have been allowed to be that way. But Alabama, Tony, bettors have a long memory. People think about Alabama last year at Vanderbilt. People think about Alabama last year at 2-win Oklahoma. And they think about the Tennessee game in Knoxville and the loss in the bowl game at Michigan. I think everybody is kind of buying in on Alabama now, because I think Ty Simpson has been a revelation. Yeah. Because you've got another coach on the field. This guy is the son of the coach of UT Martin, which is a college football program. And when you've got a guy like Ty Simpson, who's grown up around football all his life, maybe he's not the most physically gifted quarterback in the country, but he might as well be wearing a whistle and some coach's shorts out there, because he doesn't get hit much, and he pretty much runs the offense to perfection. So I think Alabama's a lot more legit than last year when Jalen Milroe, who physically was much more talented than Ty Simpson, but really didn't grasp the game plans very well and believed that it was his role to make a huge play every time the ball was snapped. Ty Simpson understands you pick up 3 and 4, you stay ahead of of the chains. You make good throws. I think Ty Simpson's a difference maker, and I just don't have much respect for Missouri. They haven't been on the road. They haven't played anybody. I've got to see a team away from home before I give them any legitimacy. I think this is a great bargain. Alabama's better than them, but still the haunting nightmare of some Alabama road bobbles in the past keep me from being all in.
I'm taking a loan out. I'm going to go ahead and knock it down. And by the way, we had Bama minus the 10.5. That was a huge play for K4 wins. We were all over that game. And of course, we like to get on games. Yeah.
Jam Miller, for getting the touchdown.
By the time this game goes off, it may be 5, 6, 7 points. I don't know. But as of right now, it's only
3. Yeah, I think it will go to 5. Five or 5.5. Missouri's getting too much respect for being undefeated at home.
Who have you seen rock and roll wise out in Las Vegas? I know you had a chance to go see the Eagles at the Sphere. Yes. You decided not to go to that show, but you have seen some other great rock acts. Give me some of your great rock acts you've seen in Las Vegas. I want to hear about.
I saw the only time I've ever seen him, Bruce Springsteen, which was phenomenal. And it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. So Bruce wasn't completely on top of his game, but he's still out there plugging. But that was a memorable show. One of my all-time favorites was on his retirement tour. And unlike people in sports and other people in music, he has not performed since the tour that I saw him on, but I got a chance to see Paul Simon in one of his final 3 or 4 performances. And Tony, he had brought people in, because at the end of Paul Simon's career, you know, of course he started with Art Garfunkel and had a long solo career, but in the last part of his career, his last 4 or 5 albums, he was experimenting with all kinds of music from all over the world. And this tour, Tony, must have cost a gazillion dollars, because he brought in people from Africa and European guys, and every song you'd go, okay, I'm going to introduce some more of our special guests. It was just a parade of probably 30 or 40 different musicians playing all kinds of very interesting instruments, and he mixed in just enough of the favorites. It's one of those shows that you just go, boy, I'm really glad that I went to this, because it was just phenomenal. And I saw some of the acts that I never would have thought I would enjoy this, but I actually saw Cher at Caesar's Palace.
Nice. Yeah.
And she was great.
Yeah.
She changed outfits 85 times in a 2-hour concert. They actually had a trailer on stage, and she would run in one side and out the other and finish the song. She was right in the middle of in a completely different outfit.
That's great.
So from a production standpoint, that was great. I'm probably forgetting some others, but that's 3 of the ones that pop in my mind right away that I'm really glad that I went to.
I wanted to bring that up sick because 55 years ago Saturday, Janis Joplin died.
Oh, which is 55 years ago.
55 years ago. And 5 years ago today, Eddie Van Halen passed away. I can't believe it's been 2020 since Eddie Van Halen passed away. And there's other birthdays, Bing Crosby's, other deaths. October's been a very bad month for rock and roll deaths. But I went to a show on Friday, and I wanted you to talk me through it, because we spoke briefly before the show. Black Jacket Symphony, you know them. They do fantastic work. They basically get together a group of guys. In this particular case, there were 14 of them. And they opened up with, I think, a Rubber Soul. It was like 20 years ago, where they were going to do this thing where they were going to put a band on stage, and they were going to, if you closed your eyes, it was going to sound just like the record. I mean, it's going to sound just like the record. And they brought in guys who did Beatles songs, everything else. And I mean, everything from they played the entire Rubber Soul album in its entirety. Okay. And they even had the scratches in between the bottoms. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And then, of course, they reached out. They've done AC/DC, Back in Black. They've done Purple Rain. They've done The Who. I mean, you name it, they've done it. And it's just incredible. They do these entire albums from start to finish. And if you close your eyes, you feel like you're sitting in your den with wood paneling in 1974. It's unbelievable. So they decided to do this thing called Yacht Rock this past Friday at the BJCC concert. Oh, by the way, they're going to be doing, I think, Pink Floyd's The Wall, I think, is the next big thing they're doing. And it really is.
That sounds
amazing.
Cool.
And they, what they do is they pride themselves on sounding as authentic to the real deal as possible. It's not just them playing. They want to make sure that everything sounds just like you remember it on the album, right? And so for them to be tackling Robbie Dupree, steal away. She's gone from Hall and Oates. Peg and reeling in the ears from Steely Dan. I mean, it takes some chutzpah. Because you're talking about all the, if you're just talking about redoing one album, for the most part, you're using the same instruments for each individual song. When you're talking about playing 20 different artists and the way they played those songs for Yacht Rock, I thought, but this is going to be really testy. This is going to be really interesting. And they pulled it off. It was fantastic. Michael McDonald songs were a little off to me. The guy who sang Michael McDonald wasn't quite on the mic. It did not sound like Michael McDonald, but he did the best he could. But they did do some Doobie Records. But I went there. Like, how often do you listen to, because I know you listen to this music, and sometimes you get caught up listening to something from the 60s or 70s or maybe the 80s, and it kind of triggers a moment in your life.
And
sometimes, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I've been in the car and I'm like, I just can't listen to this song right now. I just can't listen to Love Is the Answer. I can't. And there's other times where I just, you know, I listen to it. I just envelop myself into it. I'll roll the windows up and I'll crank it up and I'll go flying down the highway, listen to whatever. And usually it is stuff from the 60s and 70s and stuff that I was born to, was raised to, my first dates to, my schooling to, you know, all those things that bring back all these memories. So I wasn't sure how I was going to react to being at a concert where they're playing these songs live that I probably will never hear again. I will never hear Fire Falls, mm-hmm. You Are the Woman, which is a song they play, which I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. You read me the set list before, and it's phenomenal.
It really is. The funny thing is I was so freaked out by the lameness of by the people that were at the show. It was so uncool. Now I've seen Barry Manilow at the BJCC concert hall, and I saw a lot of people there. They're like, please don't tell anybody you saw me here. And I'm like, hey, me too. And it was actually kind of cool to say you were at a Barry Manilow concert, because I think everyone should see Barry Manilow one time.
Yeah. I did see him in Vegas too. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was staying at the Westgate and he had the Barry Manilow Theater and played four nights a week for almost a year. So I've seen Barry myself.
I actually knew one person there. I recognized one person. I was with a friend of mine, Dr. Josh Klapo, who loves that music as much as I do. And he's like, dude, you're going to know everybody here. You're going to know everybody here. I mean, if you're white between the ages of 50 and 80, this is your crowd, right? There was not a black person within 100 miles of that place. Black people don't do Yacht Rock. I'm just telling you that they don't. There wasn't one black person there, and the entire place was sold out. There were 4,500 people there. It was all white people between the ages of 50 and maybe 83, 84. And everyone was wearing those damn Captain and Tennille hats, right? They were throwing them out. They were thrown by the ground.
You couldn't pay me $1 million to like, I'm the captain from Captain and Tennille.
I never have felt so weird, so bad. So I couldn't get past the idea how uncool. Now, I thought Yacht Rock was kind of cool. And I know that like Daryl Hall and John Oates, they're like, they don't play together anymore. But Daryl Hall's like, don't even put us in the same sentence with Yacht Rock. You would think they'd want to, because it's a reverberation. It's what people are coming back for. People are now buying Doobie Records again.
And it's a
again.
Tribute to their art.
It is. And people are buying their records again because Yacht Rock is hot, right? And he's like, I don't want to be known. So anytime a new genre comes up, you want to call it whatever you want, and you're selling records that are 55 years old, I would think that Hall & Oates would love that. But it was so uncool to be in that place. And it was amazing because there were groups of people. I can't even explain it. There were groups of people that were reveling in it. Like after the concert was over, no one left. I almost felt like I was looking for the Lido deck. I felt like I was getting off a Caribbean cruise. Like it was one of those bands, a Caribbean cruise, but they were really, really good. I can't even explain it. And at that point I thought, am I that uncool? Because I'm looking at Dr. Josh and I thought, you know, I had a pair of jeans and a Hawaiian shirt on, and I'm thinking to myself, am I this unhip? Am I
this old?
Holy shit. I mean, I'm turned 60 next year and I'm not kidding you. And I was like, man, this is, and I'm looking at Josh and I'm like, this feels really, really bizarre. This feels really strange. And then he said
he's a psychiatrist.
He said sometimes he felt like he was sitting in a nursing home. People were like,
Yeah.
clapping off beat, you know, the guy comes up and there's this guy with a long ponytail and he's looking at the 72-year-old.
Did they
and he's
give
like,
you a cookie and a glass of juice while you're watching the show?
Oh my gosh, they were selling prunes. There was a Metamucil of counter.
A Depends booth set up.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
Walkers. It was the most cool. And I Blackjack and Symphony. These guys really are good, and they did a fantastic job.
Sounds great.
And if you close your eyes, and I'm not saying I won't go to another show. I told Josh, you know, if they just do a different set, because there's a million Yacht Rock songs. If they'll just do 20 different songs every year, they could probably tour for the rest of their lives. And they're always.
I know that's a pandemic. Pandora station, yeah. Yacht Rock. Yeah.
They brought in a, yeah, sure is. And it's also on Sirius XM satellite. But they brought it. And the other thing about Yacht Rock is it's very subjective. You know, a song that you may think is Yacht Rock, I may say, no, I don't think it's Yacht Rock. There was one of the songs Everywhere from Fleetwood Mac. I don't consider
that. Well, I've got a solution to your problem, Tony. Yeah. We just need to grow the media empire to the point where we can buy our own yacht. And then we can sit out there and not feel uncool listening to the tunes because we won't have any Captains and Tennille's with us.
Oh my gosh. It was, and that's the funny thing is there wasn't one Captain and Tennille song they played. They didn't play one. They didn't play Muskrat Love.
Thank God. The worst song ever recorded.
That is the worst song ever recorded. But yeah, I kind of went through, I was thinking to myself, Jay Ferguson, Thunder Island would be in there and that didn't make it. A Ride Like the Wind from Christopher Cross was one of the songs they played.
That's a great one.
Everyone. Yeah. That was a huge album for him. Lots of Doobie Brothers songs, anything from Michael McDonald.
Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac, which was one of my favorite Christine McVie songs. Mm-hmm.
And there was there was only one woman in the band and she was fantastic. It was great, but it was three guys, one from Toronto. And there was a guy named Campbell, who's a local guy who was just lights out fantastic. And then this other guy who was just quite frankly, he was a creep. I mean, he was a creep. He'd be perfect on a cruise ship. He had a long ponytail on and he was the one that sang the Michael McDonald songs. He was a little off on a few of those, but he's pretty good. But he was sitting there carousing, if you will, or trying to get it on with the ladies in the crowd. He was licking his lips and trying to play the whole part. And it was like, oh, this is so uncomfortable. But anyway, so I almost felt like it was the death of Yacht Rock for me. And I just wanted to bring this up. I don't really know where I wanted to go with this with you. But I actually thought to myself, okay, I don't know if I can listen to Yacht Rock again and not feel bad doing it. And I felt bad because that's my music.
On your own yacht, I think that would work.
Yeah. And I think that's the whole idea. Cause people are like, where did Yacht Rock come from? And Yacht Rock came from the idea, and you didn't have to be necessarily wealthy. It could have been called boat rock, but it doesn't rhyme, right? So they use yacht rock because yacht rock sounds better, right? But it's
the boat kind of, rock sounds like you're about to sink.
Yeah, it's the kind of music that if you were sitting down at AJ's, you know, and you're wanting to listen to some type of that 70s on and on Elvin Bishop type of music, it would fit right in there. Yep. And that's what people and you know, obviously. But I don't know, man. I was so embarrassed. I sat there and I never left my seat. I'm 6'4", I'm 6'4", 6'5". Normally, when I go into an arena, I will stand up several times because I want people to see me. I'll be honest with you. I want people to go, oh, it's Tony Curry.
Sure.
Yeah, sure, because I was in the radio business for 40 years. And I'll turn around and I'll act like I'm looking for someone. So everyone gets a good look at my face. And then maybe someone I know will come down and say, hey, or whatever like that. I didn't stand up one time the entire show. I just slumped. Just slumped down on my seat and put my hand over. There was a guy right in front of me. They had the whole white jacket on with the parakeet on his shoulder.
Oh, my goodness.
On his shoulder.
Yeah, what a bizarre deal. I've got a 33-year-old son, and I'm just picturing if he had wandered in there, he would still be talking. I took him when he was about 17. We were on our way somewhere else, and I caught a Jackson Browne show in Biloxi and kind of drug him along, and he's still talking about it. He's going, you know, I was 40 years younger than everybody in the whole place. It was the weirdest thing ever. That's what your recounting of this is reminding me of.
Seriously, there were... There were ushers there, all the ushers, the black ushers that were sitting on the sides. And obviously there was not going to be any problems with the crowd. There was not going to be no one. Stood
yeah,
out.
I don't think there was probably a big police presence.
Yeah. You're making my dreams come true from Hall & Oates was the one song that everyone stood up to when they were starting to clap. But you could tell how uncomfortable they were sitting there watching all these pasty white folks in white jackets trying to relive this part of their life that they wanted to get back, knowing that. And the only reason I went is because where else are you going to go and hear Robbie Dupree song live? You won't hear that. And I say Christopher Cross, he just played at the Coco Amphitheater several weeks ago. But I mean, you're just not going to hear that music, at least at that quality, with a band that's actually wanting to play that music. And I'm thinking to myself, man, what have we got? What are we doing here? What's going on? It was crazy, man. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you went. That was a good cultural experiment.
Yeah.
I know both of us are in the mindset that we're nowhere near the age that we actually reflects on our driver's license.
True.
But so I can see where you're a little uncomfortable. That was kind of like your first sticking your toe in the geriatric water. God, and I don't think you're quite ready for that.
No, I don't think so. Well, I kept thinking to myself, you know, like some people get on their Facebook pages and they try to pull up old girlfriend's pictures to see what they look like 20 years later. You know, we all do that. But occasionally, occasionally I'll get online and I'll pull up Pablo Cruz on tour just to see if they're playing somewhere. Cause I want to know. And they are, you know, like Orleans is still playing. Pablo Cruz is still playing. Kansas is still playing music. And I'm thinking to myself, but they're all playing like casinos. They're probably playing like every Porch Creek Indian casino out there. They may be down in Aruba. Sure. And hey, by the way, man, Pablo Cruz at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, dude. I mean, I'd buy the whole fourth floor and we'd have a throwdown. That would be fantastic. If you want to do them, Little River Band and Orleans, the three of those bands together at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, that would be just a killer. That would be a fantastic show. But yeah, these bands don't play together anymore. So when you want to go see them play, it's really difficult to find them. So at least Black Jacket Symphony. By the way, Black Jacket Symphony, they usually do like a couple of shows of one of the albums they're done. They're doing this Yacht Rock thing for the next few weeks. So if you get a chance to go see them, go check them out. But
oh, okay. Yeah. That wasn't one and done.
No. But yeah, you will feel like a total idiot when...
Well, it sounds like it, but the music sounds fabulous. So.
And I actually thought that maybe I could meet Mrs. Curry too there. I thought, you know,
yeah,
because everyone's dressed the nines. Everyone's
Mrs.
trying to dress
Curry, the sequel. Yes.
Yeah. Just Miss Curry, the sequel. I thought, you know what? And I'm not kidding you. There was a couple of gals there that looked like they had some good augmentation going that were probably in their 60s. No, I'm still gonna hang out with the 30 and 40 year olds and take my shots.
I had a meeting with my tax attorney last week and he mentioned that he knows the original Mrs. Curry.
Really?
And was very complimentary of her.
I'm sure he was. I know how to pick him for sure. All right, my man, have yourself a wonderful time in Las Vegas. I know you're taking out this afternoon. We will hold down the fort here. And I know you get an opportunity. What a blessed man you are to get a chance to go out there. And of course, you're going out there for the kick of the NHL season. Real quick.
Yeah, Wednesday night, the Golden Knights and the LA Kings. Hockey is back. My official duty there is to go out to the Global Gaming Convention at the Venetian, which is a fabulous show. All these manufacturers from all over the world introducing the most recent electronic games. And, of course, here at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, we have historic horse racing machines, mm-hmm. which quack like a slot machine and pay like a slot machine and look like a slot machine. Yep. So they must be a slot machine, but they would not be legal here.
Yeah, exactly.
But the HHR machines have reached great levels of sophistication. So I am charged with going out and talking to all the manufacturers and learning all the new innovations and bells and whistles.
It is
incredible. So I'm going to really enjoy that for a couple of days because this show is phenomenal and everybody who's anybody in the gaming business is out there. So
I don't know if it was Katrina or not, but one hurricane hit Biloxi particularly hard, and maybe it was Katrina.
Yeah,
and I can remember the pictures of slot machines on the beach because it was unbelievable. And people were obviously trying to scavenge these things. First of all, they're incredibly heavy. It's not like you can pick one up. I've got one down in my basement. I got one of the old 777 things, and it takes four people to pick it up. That's how old and it's huge. But they were telling me that some of these machines go for like $75,000 a piece. Is that true?
I think that's even conservative. If you go out to the Birmingham Racecourse Casino today, the machines now are not like they used to be in Vegas, which are about your forehead height. They are these massive towering things now. They're like 8, 9, 10 feet tall. If you can jump and take a quarter off the top of one, then
if they store two quarters. Yes. I was blessed enough to be able to go to Vegas and actually remember getting the quarters, which was kind of fun. It was a pain in the ass to walk around with a big bucket of quarters, but it was kind of fun until they started coming out with it was neat. It was neat to have.
Yeah,
to
with my oldest son, Tony, one trip to Vegas, he used to love going out there with because he just was obsessed with the whole scene there, even when he was 11 and 12 years old. We made it our mission, and you're still doing this kind of dad stuff. We made it our mission to go into every casino in a 4-day period we could access and get the big cups that were used to give people to put their quarters in.
Nice.
We come a long way from that. There are no more cups and there are no more quarters. Here at the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, they just introduced the same technology being used in Vegas. You have to have a player's card because they track everything you do and know exactly how to market to you based on what you play. But any play you can't, they're even starting to phase out the dollar collectors, and you're supposed to put all of your action on your card, and that's what activates your account. And if you win, they put money on. If you lose, they take money away. That's where we're going. There's not going to be any coins, and soon no dollars at all.
To your benefit. I know a lot of people aren't into rewards and stuff like that. Let me tell you something. If you go to a casino, get your card, man, because it's amazing, because the rewards they're actually pretty good, and you'd be surprised. I mean, if you go out there to Vegas, I used to go out with $2,000 for like 5 or 6 days. And of course, there was a couple of times I was out of cash by Tuesday and I was having to borrow from somebody else. By the way, if you go to an ATM,
my dad cashed his plane ticket in once back in the old days when you're allowed to do that.
If you go to an ATM in Las Vegas, you're in trouble. You do not ever want to go to an ATM.
Your point is so spot on. I've got a good friend of mine, my lifelong friend, Steve Hardy, who was the best basketball player our school ever produced. He got a 4-year ride to Coastal Carolina right when they were starting up and played there, married to Betty Ann, his high school sweetheart, who I've known for, I'm not going to mention how many years, but a long time. They went close to their place in Atlanta is the Cherokee Indian Casino up in around the North Carolina border to Tennessee. They go up there just about every other weekend. And just from playing and having their card and being tracked, Tony, they go to Vegas and get comped at the Cosmopolitan, which is like a 5-star resort.
Nice.
They get all their meals. They get shuffled around. I mean, and that's just from being slot players. I mean, you're right. You can get phenomenal rewards if you're a loyal customer. They take care of you.
We were down in Biloxi. I was at the Grand or the Beau Rivage, and I got to my room. I don't know what time it was. And I remember walking down the casino the following day, and everyone knew my name. Good morning, Mr. Curry. And I was like, the hell?
It's unbelievable.
I ended up having a really, really good night. It was the best night I'd ever had at a casino, period. I was, and when I have a good time, man, I'm throwing cash all over the place. I'm giving $25 chips to waitresses. I have a hell of a good time. If I can get out of there and I break even, I mean, it's a win-win. And so I was way up, and it was like only the third day we were there. And when I went back to look, you could actually track and see how much money you actually played. So if you're sitting at a blackjack table, $25 blackjack table, and you're playing 14 hands an hour, you can do the math and you start looking at it. And it was like $113,000 or something, I bet that night. I mean, I showed up at the casino with $2,000 in my pocket, but all the betting I did, it was like 130. Yeah. And I was like, that's to think that I bet $113,000 cash. I mean, it was like, holy crap. It just, I mean, it will blow your mind. But obviously I was comped the rest of the time I was there. I lost a lot of it, but I had just a great time. It was so, yeah, it was so much fun. It only takes one of those trips. Yeah.
If you're a decent sized player, they will take care of you. And yep. I always have the fantasy, once before I go to the next level, I want to do the James Bond thing. I want to go in there in my white tux jacket and my black tie and sit down at, you know, he always does a roulette, you know.
Yep.
Baccarat.
Is, yeah.
His big game. Oh. And I have this fantasy. I don't even know how to play, but I want to do what James Bond does. Bonko. That's what you say when you want to join in, and yep. they pass you the shoe.
Yeah.
And because everybody takes turns being the dealer. I just want to, in my tux, say Bonko one time at the
Hey, brother, you're going to be out in Vegas later on tonight. You should do it, man. I'm envious of you. I'm so happy you get a chance to go out there and spend time with your family and you get to go to Vegas. I haven't been
out there. Get to see the grandkids. So, I mean, yeah. What a bonus. Go to a great convention, and a lot of folks from the Birmingham Racing Commission are going to be out there. So we're going to have a large time for sure. And I'm going to get some good features and do some quick promos for all of our shows. Starting lineup is going gangbusters right now, and everything is going great on the local radio. So looking forward to it, but I can't wait to get back, and I will be right back in this seat next Monday after all that, a week in Vegas and a weekend at Auburn, but I'll be right back here next week for Need to Know and Kiefer and Curry.
Safe travels, my friend. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Tony.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.